Today, I'll be answering questions about geopolitical events facing America in 2022. This is Brief Before Impact. All right, welcome everyone. This is Matt Parker. In today's episode, I asked folks to send me any of their frequently asked questions about geopolitical events. And so what I'm going to just try to do is just go through my opinions on a number of them. I'll read off a few that I got via Instagram. For one, what is America's foreign policy? What does that actually look like between administrations, Republican and Democrat? We're going to talk about the inflated energy prices, not so much how we've got to this place, but where energy is, broadly speaking, both American and abroad, and how what other countries are doing, both whether it's renewables or oil and gas, and how that's going to be affecting just Americans in the future. And right into that is climate change. I'm not a scientist, not going to debate how human activity is affecting it, but more importantly, what are those second and third order consequences of global climate change? You know, a river dries up. How does that affect, you know, some countries that depend on that water? Then we're going to go into cybersecurity, which is a huge issue. It's a growing issue, and it affects you and I, anyone who's on the internet and has their data, more importantly, or does any type of online presence, it's going to be affecting us. And lastly, from a good friend in SF, what is the special operations role in any type of global power competition? And if you're not familiar with that term, all it means is between the great powers in the world, whether it's United States, Russia, China, or any of our other allies in the regions, what will special operations be doing in that? So these are all just some frequently asked questions that I get. And so we're going to jump right in. Let me take a quick ad break while I record this, and we'll get started. All right. Welcome back, everyone. So let's start off with American foreign policy and where we are moving towards as a country. I'm sure you've been paying attention. Between Republicans and Democrats here in the United States, there is this issue of what is America's role abroad? Should it be we are engaged, we are a leader of the free world, and we should be fighting authoritarian type governments around the world? Or should we take more of an isolationist mentality? Should we be reserved, taking care of ourselves? Let's look at the consequences right now, what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. We just spent a $40 billion package to Ukraine, which I've argued is the right mission to be involved in to push back against Russia in this part of the world. But there's the other side of the argument is, well, what about whether it's the baby formula shortage here in the United States or other type of supply chain issues that are affecting just Americans? And we, our policymakers, just sent $40 billion out the door. That type of discussion is constantly a push and pull between those who want to be leading the world from a foreign policy perspective and those who are just more like focused on taking care of domestic issues. And it's not even necessarily breaking down along political party lines. There are both elements of the Republican and Democratic parties who believe we as a country should be more focused on domestic issues. And in my mind, just from my experiences abroad, I look at doing our very best to striking a balance between the two. For example, if we look at some regional issues, Iran, Taiwan, Venezuela, and Latin America, all these have to have a defined end state of how every administration is going to approach them, because they do, in fact, carry on beyond just Republican or Democrat. Meaning this, Iran has been pursuing a nuclear weapon for several years now. That doesn't just affect the next electoral, the next president who wants to be elected. This is going to continue to be an issue dealt by both political parties. So ideally, we have a cohesive policy to that issue. And we've seen the back and forth already. You think about Obama and his administration who passed that the joint comprehensive deal between Iran. And then as soon as Trump came into power, he immediately outruled it. Then as soon as Biden came into power, he immediately is trying to put it back into place. This is what that push and pull. Ideally, America is able to say, all right, we want to be, our end goal is here. We're at A, we want to be at point B. How can we do that effectively, efficiently as possible. But that's the challenge, is that there's this debate of what America's role is. So how could you expect Republicans or Democrats to agree on the type of policy we should be enacting when we can't even decide what role we should be playing in the world? And so this is a challenge, I think, for Americans' foreign policy. And this is nothing new. It's been going on for decades in the post-World War II era, where the United States has been that global leader. With that, let's pivot over to energy. Terrific question on not just what's affecting energy prices. There's far more articulate economists talking about that and experts in the field. But I wanted to highlight what pursuing new types of energy is going to do for global competition. Obviously, renewables, wind, solar, nuclear are all going to play a role into geopolitics between countries. What I mean by that is, for years, the United States was dependent on Middle Eastern oil, right? From the age of OPEC onward until the miracle of fracking happened, that was really what the consequences of those relationships were. America was often dependent in some ways on what Middle Eastern countries and the countries that we imported oil from, what they were doing domestically. And those things had an effect on how we deployed our military forces, what kind of military sales that we would allow to other countries. And so as you see this energy revolution and new technologies begin to develop, not just here in the United States, but around the world, I think that you will see almost a peeling apart of traditional alliances that lasted historically because the necessity of oil. Now, I tell my colleagues at work, I'm not loyal to like fossil fuels. I really could care less. I'm more interested about what the technology works best. If some brilliant engineer comes up tomorrow with a renewable source of energy that is just as efficient and effective as fossil fuels and doesn't damage the planet, fantastic. That's awesome. In my opinion, we're not there yet. This being said, this energy revolution we're going through is going to have many ripples to different countries, especially those who are wanting to drive up their economies. Let's take India and China, for example, two of the world's biggest polluters. They're trying to catch up to the United States, economically speaking, by developing, say, in China, their manufacturing base and continuing to grow that out. They need fossil fuels to do that right now. And you know, things like coal, for example, that put off a ton of pollution. I've never been to Shanghai, but I've seen the photos and videos of the just dense pollution over that city, and the air quality is terrible. China, for example, is not going to stop producing that type of emissions until they get to where they want to be economically. So we can, as America, we can weaken our own domestic production of energy in the effort to combat climate change. But our geopolitical competitors and adversaries are not going to do that. So in my mind, not being an energy expert, my mind is, let's diversify our different energy baskets, whether that's traditional fossil fuels or wind, solar, nuclear certainly has a huge, tremendous role in this space. That's what I would like to see, so America can be more self-independent, more and less reliant on foreign countries that might not be aligned with our values politically. This is an important piece, I think. And this goes right into the issue of climate change, where we're getting our sources of energy, and whether climate change is really on your priority list or not, it does in fact affect countries around the world, particularly those that are less developed that kind of rely on fossil fuels. Think about this for a second. What if you had a river that multiple countries depended on for a source of clean water or a source of fishing, for example, and not all these countries had aligned policies, but they all depended on this one river. And through climate change, that river started to begin drying up. And so the alliances, the deals that each country made by having access to that water, now it's like, well, this is a limited resource. We need this resource. You know, I'm country X. I'm the leader. I am loyal to my own citizens. I have to make sure that my citizens have something. This is where climate change then begins affecting, say, water rights, water access management. Then that becomes a limited resource that countries will eventually fight over. And if that's the case, then we see regional instability and potentially even war. This is the compounding effects of climate change. I'm not going to here to argue of what causes it or not, how much activity by humans is causing it, or one way or the other. It's not my field. But this is how I think it can become a more relevant issue to people beyond just those who are very pro-climate change and combating it, and those who say it's not existing at all. I actually think there's kind of a more middle-of-the-road approach we could take to having that discussion without being, you know, a more so far, you know, right or left on that issue. Okay, this is a terrific topic. Thanks for asking this question on cybersecurity. Cybersecurity, it's a field that's exploding because our lives are online. We are constantly, whether it's just here on social media like Instagram or ordering, you know, groceries via Amazon, cybersecurity is going to continue to grow because our data is out there and it needs to be more and more protected. We especially saw this during COVID, which attacks on small businesses via cyber attacks to steal data just exploded through the roof. A couple of things I think we're going to deal with from a cybersecurity standpoint in the next few years continue. Immediately in the short term, the 2022 midterm elections. Let's rewind the clocks to 2016 election with Trump, 2020, and the last election with Biden. The influence of social media, especially like bots from either a Twitter bot or, you know, Russian hacking groups that are trying to influence the election. And by the way, and I've talked about election influences in the past, nothing new. Intelligence services, including America's, have done that in some capacity around the world. So I'm not here. I'm just going to say, let's brush off the fact that this stuff happens and more like say, okay, if it does, how is this going to impact the belief that American citizens have that my vote counted, this is a fair and honest election, and fraud to whatever degree was limited as much as possible. So this is going to be, I think this is going to be a big thing moving forward. Again, coming back to COVID, remote work. So many of us were working remotely for a period of time. Again, if I'm a business owner, and now I've been paying, you know, X amount of dollars per month for this real estate to house all my employees. Now they're all working remotely. I say, okay, I can see this benefit. I'm going to cut this real estate. But what about the issue of connection issues or make sure our data is protected while we're communicating all these different devices? Remote work has, I think, and via COVID has really shifted this stigma of being productive at home. But it's also brought the additional challenge of protecting a company's data, your customers' data, and cybersecurity is going to continue to play a huge part in every company's budget. I don't see how any CEO can say, "Yeah, we can shave off some dollars on protecting our IT budget." I certainly don't think so. And this goes right here into the last point of cybersecurity, supply chains. Again, we all felt that constraint during COVID and what it was like to not have products at our beck and call like we were so used to via the power of like Amazon. We had two-day delivery. Now we're seeing ships stacked up outside of Los Angeles port and we're just waiting for it to be able to deliver their goods. And supply chains and specifically cybersecurity attacks, cyber attacks against supply chains are going to play, I think, a further role, not just in the desire to steal data, but even in terms like of a military conflict. If you think, for example, a great power adversary of America's wanting to begin prepping the battlefield, we'll use that language, prepping the battlefield to ready its military to attack ours in some capacity. This is a big hypothetical here. What I could certainly see, multiple cyber attacks against key parts of our supply chains, whether it's our commercial or our defense supply chains, in order to prepare itself for the imminent battle. So our election process, working remotely, supply chains, all of these are just a couple of key points in the technological revolution that we're in, and it continues to grow, but there's so many vulnerabilities that go with it. And this is why cybersecurity is going to be a huge part, I think, of our economy moving forward. This will bring me to my last point, which was offered up by a former teammate and great friend, talking about special operations in great power competition. So if anybody's watching on Instagram, special operations, it's kind of an umbrella term, right? It would include, obviously, like my former unit, Army Special Forces, but others, such as, Navy SEALs, U.S. Army Rangers, a few Tier 1 units like Delta Force, SEAL Team 6, if you've ever heard of those. Now, great power competition is kind of an emerging idea, especially as countries like the United States, China, Russia are all looking to seek influence abroad, all looking to seek, especially those countries that have been less developed in the past. The African continent is kind of the mecca of this issue right now. And so United States is asking itself, from a military perspective, how are we going to engage against China's economic goals in Africa, in addition to our military commitments, especially fighting countering terrorism in this huge body of land? And if we're shifting, like you've heard my past episodes on what the military is doing, kind of shifting away from the counterterrorism fight that we've been doing for the last 22 years, and now moving to pivot itself to focus on the fight of against China in order to, say, fight off against Taiwan, how are we going to compete in this environment? And when you look at special operations, specifically, I'll focus on my former unit, Army Special Forces. The bread and butter of Army Special Forces was to engage with its counterparts in a foreign military, to train and work, you know, by, with, and through with a partner, a country partner, in order to deter, whether it's in previous cases, terrorism, or in this case, like I'm talking about, Chinese influence. So the first point I wanted to make on how special operations can be a part of this fight is, one, we have to establish our priorities. And this, again, goes into that same idea. Are we going to focus only on countering terrorism, which is still a problem, though you might not hear about it as much in Africa, or are we just going to focus on countering China, which is the greater threat? Certainly regionally, terrorism is, but that being said, the more strategic threat, the threat that has the more impacts on America as a whole, is going to be China. Once we decide between those two, then we can have an action point to then go decide on how to engage the enemy in that case. And that right there, the engagement is a key part of this. And what I mean is, Army Special Forces historically will deploy to a foreign country, engage with their counterparts in, you know, country X's military or police force, etc., providing training, providing tactics, procedures, etc., everything, all the competencies of a military unit. And this engagement is going to be key, especially in countering China. And one of the main reasons is beyond just an economic battle of flooding money into this continent, building different infrastructure projects, this is also a competition about ideology, I think. And what I mean by that ideology is the communist state of China versus the liberal democracy of the United States, and more broadly speaking, a liberal democracy of the West. And this is why I think that role is such an important part, because they have to complement one another. A holistic kind of whole of government approach includes that economic piece, inviting the private sector in to engage African countries in different infrastructure projects. But right alongside them, you have to have, you know, American ambassadors deployed into these different regions, engaging at that local level, you know, that just local level of that regional commander and his and all of the troops that work for him, and ensuring that the type of government that we'd like to see blossom and burgeon in all these countries is more leaning to that liberal democracy rather than that authoritarian type of government style from the Chinese Communist Party. For example, that's the kind of the key engagement that's going to make us successful. And this goes right into this third piece of special forces typically are living in the tactical, right? The actual tactics of military forces. But what we need to do is be understanding the strategic. This is something that I've seen teams be really good at or not so good at. And what I mean by this is, Army guys are great, are often great at tactics, kicking in doors and shooting guns. But it's understanding the strategic end state of why we're teaching these tactics in the first place. I think combining those competencies make us just more an effective, you know, ambassador on behalf of the United States in our foreign policy objectives abroad. And last point on the special operations role in this great power competition is going to be the new tools and technology that are going to be required to counter China. Beyond just the small unit tactics that we're so common to us that we've been doing for so many years. Now we're going to have to get into things like cyber capabilities, information warfare, which I frankly think can be implemented at that tactical level brilliantly by special forces. However, we're going to have additional competencies and additional skill sets that haven't been implemented in the last 20 years. We're going to have to, in addition to just the standard small unit tactics, we're going to have to say, all right, this one guy on our team is going to be our cyber expert. We're going to send him to a coding school for 12 weeks. He's going to learn how to focus on information warfare and really bring that aspect back to the fold of the unconventional warfare, competency. This is how I think United States can focus on the great power competition in a continent like Africa. And I'll close out with this last piece, because I think of the common thread between each of these subjects, energy policy, the effects of climate change and geopolitics, cybersecurity, et cetera. It's America has to, and Americans have to decide, what is it we want out of our foreign policy? Where do we want to see America end up in the long run? Now, many people say, well, we want to, or at least I'll advocate for my own positions, we want a strong, safe, prosperous America. Okay, that's totally reasonable, I think. That's not out of the realm of possibility. By doing so, we have to realize that we might have to spend $40 billion in Ukraine. That might be a possibility. You might be upset, well, why can't Ukrainians defend themselves? And this is that back and forth challenge of, if America, in my opinion, wants to continue being the most prosperous country in the world and the defender of other countries around the world, which I think is a righteous cause for us to take on, then we have to be willing to understand that those come with a cost. That leadership comes with a cost, whether it's just in dollars or by the loss of life in warfare. This is certainly a real possibility. And I think what many Americans don't quite grasp, it's the rising fuel prices that we're experiencing, or your price of your iPhone went up another $200. All of those things aren't just unique to the borders of the United States. There are so many effects of geopolitical events around the world that have a direct impact on that. Whether it's Russia invading Ukraine and a potential lack of wheat in many of these countries that import wheat from Ukraine. That's going to be an issue in the next 6 to 12 months, because crops are not going to be planted or harvested by Ukrainian farmers. China was to invade Taiwan, Taiwan has 90% or so of the world's semiconductors. That's going to have an impact on whether you get that new truck or you get that new iPhone. All those things have a role into American foreign policy and, more importantly, American security and prosperity. So I'll close it out with that. As always, thanks for everybody who joined. And I, as always, hope you are picking up what I'm putting down. I am Matt Parker. This is Brief Before Impact.